Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Adusk, and this is Financial Survival for what is today? Tuesday, 9th day of July, year of our Lord, 2013. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Our guest today is Roger S. Sales, calling in from Argentina. And he was offline, but now he's back online, and now we can actually reach him. It's hard to call Roger if his phone isn't up and ready to operate. But Roger will be with us in a moment. First thing we'll do is the market reports. Gold is up $10.80 to $1,249 per ounce. Silver is up 16 cents to $19.34. Platinum is up $6 to $1,371 per ounce. Palladium is up $2 to $704 per ounce. Dow Jones is up almost 77 points to 15,301. NASDAQ is up 18 points to 3,503. New York Stock Exchange is up 80 points to 9,346. U.S. dollar is up 0.35 to 84.58. Crude oil is up 81 cents to $103.95 per barrel. And it appears that virtually everything is up today, which always reminds me of, what was it, Garson Keillor and Lake Wobegon or something. I don't remember the name of it exactly, but his fictional community, I think in Minnesota or Maine, I don't recall, where all of the children were above average. All right? And, you know, you can't all be above average. That's just the reality of it. And here we have a market day where it appears that virtually everything is up. It would make sense if everything was up except the dollar. The dollar was down. I could understand that. It might make sense if virtually everything was down and the dollar was up. But when we see everything up, what's that mean, Roger?
Well, you know, Al, buenas tardes, good afternoon, by the way. You were talking about Garrison Keillor a second ago there in Lake Wobegon, where all the children are above average. Well, I think Garrison retired, and we're at Lake Dunbengon, and I don't believe all the children are even at average.
Well, it depends on whether they're homeschooled or they're public school graduates.
Absolutely.
Now, if they're homeschooled, they're above average. If they're public school, probably not.
This is an interesting point that we've touched on in previous weeks of the logo of the snake eating its tail. On that particular point right there, I read an article lately where all the big schools like Duke and the upper prestigious schools, man, they are after the homeschoolers like crazy.
Yeah, but, you know, some, that's good to hear. I hadn't heard that before, but it doesn't surprise me. Because they, on average, are the best quality students we have in this country. And this is an indictment for government control of education. Government has, and we'll maybe get to it later on today, or we could talk about it right now, they have a new Common Core program that is intended to replace or supplant No Child Left Behind, which was started by Bush. But here's a description of it. The Common Core Standards, State Standards Initiative is a federal initiative designed to homogenize diverse state educational curricula. It's also the latest example of destructive federal overreach into the education system. Like its predecessor, No Child Left Behind, Common Core will not produce vibrant, inspired thinkers eager to tackle the world. Instead, they're going to try to get everybody to think pretty much the same way. It'll be their objective. And what do you think about it? You're a former educator.
Well, I think that they love the herd mentality. And as an educator, I can tell you, because I did this for 10 years, and I ran into this personally at that point. And you get in that situation, and it puts you in a real bad precarious, if you will, position. And the reason for that is because you are absolutely almost mandated and dictated to teach to the bottom dwellers, if you want
I understand
to just, that. Know what we used to call them. And then the people that are in there, the homeschoolers that are bright and have incentive and drive and ambition and all that stuff, they get bored and they don't pay attention and you lose them.
You know, one of the things I'd guess that homeschoolers have that you're not going to find in public schools is a sense of optimism. I think when you are the homeschoolers I've seen, and I don't have extensive background with this, but I have a little bit, and the homeschoolers I've seen, they are eager for life. They believe they're competent. They believe that they can go out and do something important and prosperous, and they think the world is a pretty good place.
They got hope.
I don't get that feeling from what I see or sense in the public schools. They are resigned. They have a
What the basis, one of the strong bases here is almost all of the homeschoolers have strong ethical, moral basis that they build on. And all those courses are built on morals, personal responsibility, and that gives somebody hope. You're in these public schools, all they see is disaster everywhere, and they're going, well, what the heck am I going to do?
Well, there's another point. You're talking about personal responsibility. But personal responsibility also corresponds to a measure of personal independence.
Sure.
If we're going to teach the herd mentality in our public schools, we are necessarily not going to teach independence. We're not going to teach the idea that you can survive, you can prosper, you can do well in this life. We're going to teach the, a certain amount of regimentation, and I don't see it's conducive to optimism. What can I do? I can't do any better than all the rest of the morons that I'm going to school with. That's the lesson.
Some years ago, I heard G. Edgar Griffin one day, of course, prolific writer. Many people know of his work, familiar with his sterling career, if you will. And he framed this differently. Instead of the right-left paradigm, he said, what you do is in your thinking, you shift the paradigm. And his shift was to individual versus group.
Oh, I agree.
Okay? And I took that a step further. Now you can take it into slavery versus freedom. And there's your individuality versus your group right there. So this is what I keep hammering to people, is that they've conditioned you through school, drugs, TV, everything else, to think in a certain way. They've conditioned your thinking like Pavlov. Okay, and it's the example that I've used that I read in Reader's Digest years ago, Al, and you know, in my morning constitutional one morning, and you grab Reader's Digest and flip through there, and it was in one of those little segments that has interesting things, and it was called Life in These United States, and we've talked about this before. It's the little old quintessential American town with the double highway through town and the railroad bridge that the railroad goes on top, and it's the bridge has got the arch underneath. And the 18-wheeler doesn't see the weight, the height allowance, and he gets his trailer of his 18-wheeler stuck under the bridge. So it's got a whole town blocked. They've blocked the clock. They don't know how to get the thing out. How are they going to tear down the bridge? It's going to stop the railroad traffic. It's going to disrupt the whole town. And the mayor, the city council, the city engineer, the police chief, the fire chief, everybody's sitting out there scratching their head. And the 7-year-old kid comes up and says, "Why don't you let some air out of the tires?" Okay, it's just a different way of looking at things.
I understand.
And that is something you have to do consciously. Because
well,
you
let me
gotta
ask you
break
this.
Out of the conditioning and start teaching yourself to do that. And it's not going to happen immediately, and it's not going to happen without you putting some effort and consciousness into it. Because it's
well,
a shift.
It's often not going to happen if you don't have confidence in your own ability to see and perceive. If you don't have confidence that you can make a you can offer something positive to a problem. You can make a contribution to a problem. And what I'm getting at is this. In the public school, if you are not encouraged to think on an individual basis, you're going to be discouraged in the sense that you somehow the collective is going to come up with the idea, but I won't. On the other hand, if you're raised at home, I guarantee you, your mother, your father, whoever it is that's doing the homeschooling, every time you do well, and all of a sudden you realize that the 16 squared is 256, if I remember correctly.
Good, Al. That's really good, man.
I used to be good at mathematics, but those days are gone. Now I'm getting to a point where I probably need a calculator. Yeah, if it goes more than 20 or thereabouts, I probably need a calculator. But
no.
My point is,
you need to lose a little more hair and you'll be smarter.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a good theory, but I don't know that that's the solution to the problem. Every time a homeschooler does something well, intellectually, he's going to be applauded by his teacher because that teacher is his mother or his father. And it's going to be, "Johnny, oh, great, that's right, 256, that's the square of 16. Mom is going to congratulate the child, and the child is going to say, ooh, I did something right. That encouragement gives that child confidence, not just in what he knows, but in his ability to know, his ability to make a contribution, and his ability to stand up and say, well, let the air out of the tires, while the rest of the collective is standing around trying to figure out who is going to come up with a solution.
Well, they got the bankers behind the rest of the collective, and they say, tear that bridge down so we can get our construction company to rebuild it.
Well, we don't need to necessarily tear the bridge down. We could revert. We could just leave the truck stuck there in the bridge, and we could build a new highway and tunnel a new hole under the railroad tracks and maybe have to divert the air. But because there's money to be made here.
Absolutely.
Understand, if the right contractor gets the job for punching the hole under the railroad tracks and so on, there's big bucks to be made, and that goes around, and...
Extend a bit on your example, because I think there's a very important lesson and point there, and you're going back to basic psychology, is this. You reward the kind of behavior that you want encouraged, and you discourage the kind of behavior that you don't want encouraged. So you want to bring that to a real positive example? Just look around. I mean, look at Hastings. Look at Snowden. How much of a litany do you want, you know?
Well, you know, you have a child sitting at home. All right, he's just figured out that 16 squared is 256, I hope. I don't know if that's true or false. I think
get
true,
your calculator out.
Somebody send me a homeschooler. Tell me whether I'm calculating correctly or not. I am a public school graduate, but back then they actually taught people something in the schools. I don't know that they taught us enough, but they taught us. We had a good education, I think, coming out of high school, for example. So where was I? The child also homeschooler. At times, he will come up with new ideas. And it's not just a question of learning that 16 times 16 is 256 and being congratulated on that. The child will sometimes come up with a new idea and say, Mom, what about such and such and such and such? I saw them robins out there in the nest today, and does that mean such and such? And Mom is going to say, you know, that's a very interesting idea. But you take that same child and you put him in a public school classroom, and the child is going to come up with a new idea, and he's going to say something about seeing the robins in the nest and say, does this mean such and such and such and such? And the teacher is going to be a little bit upset with him because he's not ringing up questions that teach to the test. He's not original thought necessarily kind of disrupts the group. And I don't think it's going to be
know the answer.
Well, it's probably true, too. He belongs perhaps on talk radio, just like me. I don't know. I'm not absolutely certain that 16 times 16, so I'm not a teacher, but I am on talk radio. In any case.
We do kick around some pretty substantial issues of substance here.
Well, I understand that, and we hope to. We hope to, at least.
We try to.
Yeah, we try to. We try to do things a little bit unusual, give it a different slant, and maybe discuss things perhaps more openly than some people do, than some people are willing to do. But there's no question where we're going with this, at least in part. No question.
Let me tell you,
universities are pursuing homeschoolers. Homeschoolers get a better education, and the government is insisting that they can control. How is it that the almighty government can control education and do a worse job than the average mother or father who stays at home to educate the kids?
Well, just look at the formula. The formula is 180 degrees in the other direction. So if you've got no child left behind, what that really says is every child left behind.
What it says is no child gets ahead. No child left behind is the same thing as saying no child gets ahead. And that being the case, that's got to be discouraging. It's got to take kids that actually have some intelligence, and they're just said, look, there's no, you're not going anywhere, Sonny. You're going to have to be just as dumb as the rest of these morons. Let me ask you this.
Okay.
What do you think? Do you think that public school education, insofar as it does not apparently encourage individual thinking and creativity, all right, that's a presumption we're operating on right now. Does this mean that the child who's graduated from public school education is permanently diminished, degraded, in a sense that he will never be able to recover that capacity for original thought? Is it something you have to encourage when the child is young? And if he doesn't get it by the time he's 18, does that mean he's unlikely to be creative in the balance of his life? Or is it just a temporary impediment that if the child is lucky, blessed, determined, he can learn to think in an original, creative way later on as a young adult?
Well, I think that's the crux of their game and their agenda, because, you know, obviously that can happen to people that came through the public school system in the same time that you and I did. Now, whether that can happen today, I don't know, because now you've got all the other influences. You've got the television and the decadent society, and you've got all the drugs and the stuff they're giving them, Ritalin, and you can go get an abortion without your parents knowing it, but you can't get an aspirin from the school nurse without their permission. All of those things are meant, I think, to totally, if they can, diminish that ability for them to pop back. Okay? And if you get into a conditioning situation, the experts will tell you that the more pressure a person is under, the deeper the conditioning takes effect, and the harder it is to get rid of. So now you see the intimidation factor that they whip on everybody, and I think that's really a large part of the equation here.
Well, it's not a good thing, and it is disturbing that the government would be so arrogant that they just insist that somehow here we have this Common Core program, and they're going to teach all of our children the same. On one level, you can understand where, if that's an improvement, you can see where it would make some sense, but There is something to be said for diversity. Even if some schools don't do a very good job, you got to let some schools do an extraordinary job. You can't hold the best back just to elevate the worst. Maybe you need two tiers. Maybe you need government control of the least effective schools. But as soon as they hit a particular level and students start graduating at a particular level and they're passing certain tests and whatever, then they say, okay, government's out of here. You know, it's a little bit like government running prisons and so on. When the prisons are really bad, government intrudes. When they're not so bad, let them go. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercial announcements. I'm here with Roger S. Sales calling in from Argentina. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with our foreign correspondent, Roger S. Sales, calling in from Argentina. Let's do a little talk a little about the CIA here for a moment, Roger. I've got an article here from commondreams.org. CIA's plan to crush leaks gets leaked.
Right? I saw that.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. How ironic.
There's the snake.
The snake's tail. Snake's eating his tail.
I don't know if he's eating his tail or the tail is smacking him over the head. He's got his own tail smacking him over the head. You know, whop, take that, C-sup. Bam, bam, ha-ha. You know, I mean, it becomes just ridiculous at times. Here's a little of the article. A CIA memo detailing the agency's plans to crush leaks has itself been leaked. And here's I mean, it's just irony. They can't even, their secret plan on to crush leaks has been leaked. Associated
cops, man. It's the Keystone Cops. It's the Keystone Cops from the 20s.
But here's some of the things that's interesting about it. The campaign, and this is the campaign to stop the leaks from leaking, is called Honor the Oath. Now, I doubt that there's anyone in government that are saying honor the oath of office to the rest of the people.
That means don't honor the oath.
Yeah. The news age, this program, Honor the Oath, aims to, quote, reinforce the CIA's corporate culture of secrecy, unquote.
Ooh.
Okay, this is from CIA Director John Brennan. And he is referring to their corporate culture. And all by itself, I wonder if that's just a casual use of language, or does that tell us something that's important?
Well, I'm going to tell you something about John Brennan. This guy's about as dirty as they come, okay? I mean, you know, there's been some tremendous research done on pre-9/11, and this guy Brennan was a real pivotal player in setting that whole thing up. And then he got rewarded, and they sent him over to Iran, and he looked over Iran for a number of years and probably stole pallets of cash by the C-130 load. And then they come back and make him head of the CIA because he's done all the workup jobs so well, you know?
Well, maybe they figured they could hit him up for some money, seeing how much he stole. They figure, hey, you bring him in, maybe he'll lend us some of the money. Hey, you know, in theory, what you're talking about, we got C-130s flying in with pallet loads of cash. They unload them off the C-130s, and then they fly them out on another C-130 that's going to a Swiss bank or whatever, owned by whoever. The whole thing is an obscenity. One of the things I talked about a little bit on the program previously is a growing awareness. We talk about the government sliding into a period, becoming fascist. And there are people who accept that idea, and I'm one of them. But what does fascism mean? And some people think it means that you have this goose-stepping government, you got troops and one thing or other like that. But fascism is presented to most people as if it has an ideology. They have something they believe in. But insofar as fascism refers to a very close and self-serving relationship between major corporations and the government, what I see fascism as is merely evidence of a completely corrupt government.
So you know how
the government passes laws that enrich the corporations. The corporations favor the government with bribes. They reward them with bribes for passing laws that favor the corporation. The government turns around, and then they pass more laws that favor the corporation. And all we're really talking about when we have a fascist government is a bunch of crooks who have seized control of both the government and the major corporations, and they're using this in a symbiotic relationship in order to extort the rest of the public. It's not ideological. It's just
no,
a criminal enterprise.
It's called a closed loop system, is what you're describing. And the most accurate definition of fascism I've ever heard was Mussolini's, and he described it in one word, and that was corporatism.
I get that, and I don't even mind it. It is, to some degree, similar to what we just saw in the report on the CIA talking about its corporate culture. There's a little bell there. It kind of goes off, and you say, there's a similarity here. But I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, I don't even think you can define it as corporatism. I think that was too flattering. I think it's like talking about privatizing the government, which is something that was advocated by Ronald Reagan back in the 80s. They wanted to privatize the government. Now we have it, and what have we got? We have an increasingly corrupt enterprise. And
you know, technically,
there's a reason to believe that maybe we're better off with a government that is not privatized.
Amen. Well, you know what they're really doing here, if you get it down to simplicity, is they're using private law for public purposes, and our country was founded on the opposite, using public law for private purposes. They've just inverted it, okay? And if you get into more of a flowery definition of corporatism, it would say where the government controls the corporations. But And in that essence, you've kind of got a reverse corporatism, because in essence, the corporations are controlling the government. Okay?
I agree with you.
It's an incestuous relationship. And it's a closed loop, and you can't go in and bust that. It's very difficult.
Well, you can if you've got enough money, because the loop runs on cash. The loop runs on cash. It's all about money and power. And if you have power and money, yeah, you're welcome. You come on in. The corruption is fine. But if you don't have the money to play the game, you're not. You're just some chump taxpayer. All right. Yeah, you get to vote every couple of years and rest that sort of thing. And they will give you a certain amount of lip service coming into the elections. But in fact, you're not even in the game.
You know, I heard a guy say one time, Al, he said, when I die, I want to be buried in Chicago so I can continue to vote.
Uh-huh. Good idea. And it's
especially with the current administration up there.
Yeah, I understand.
Did you see how many people over the 4th of July weekend were killed and shot up there?
Killed and shot up there in Chicago?
Yeah, it was like 7 or 9 people killed and 50-something people in gunshot wounds over a 4-day weekend in Chicago. It was on Drudge.
Yeah, those people sure know how to party, don't they?
They do, brother.
No, when it comes to patriotic celebrations, Chicago is there. You understand?
Hey,
they're leading. They're showing America how to party down on the 4th of July.
Well, there was a guy that was partying down up there, and he was either he was very health conscious or he was very hungry, because he was going out and picking dandelions. Well, you know, dandelions have got a lot of medicinal purposes, although they're considered a weed. And you know what happened to him? The cops came and told him he couldn't pick the weeds. I mean, the snake is eating its tail, man.
I understand that. I think, again, to eat its tail, I think that tail is smacking the snake over the head with its own tail.
Let's hope so.
But
it's about time it started smacking the head of that thing.
You know, you are familiar with reports, go back at least a decade, it'd be my guess, that at least some police departments are intentionally selecting candidates who want to be policemen based on low IQs.
Yeah, there was a court case on that recently.
Well,
I just heard the results. The guy had a high IQ, and they didn't hire him, and he sued him. And the court case came back and said, you know, they don't have to hire you because you got a high IQ.
Well, here's my problem, or here's my question. Let's suppose that we know that our local police force has been intentionally recruited based on their low IQs. All right? Something under 100, less than average. Should people with low IQs be trusted to exercise the kind of discretion, the kind of, you know, individual choice, whether they should shoot somebody, thump them on the head with a club, or taser them, or give them a dose of pepper spray? Does this increase the community's liability if we know they are entrusting low IQ individuals with incredible power and discretion?
Well,
I mean, it's like giving a child keys to a new Ferrari. Can the child, is that child capable of driving a Ferrari? Are people with low IQs, can they be reasonably allowed to thump people on the head whenever they think it's appropriate? Or if the police department doesn't have a fair distribution of intelligence, not just below average, but above average also, where at least there's one guy. I'm not saying all cops, I'm not saying every cop has to be a genius, but I'm saying there should be some intelligent cops who are there to restrain the rest of the freaking morons.
Well, let me tell you, I had a neighbor.
Can we sue him?
When I lived in Florida before I moved down here, when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, I had a neighbor down there who was the second in command of fairly, not Atlanta, but let's say one of the larger Georgia cities. I'll leave it at that. And he was the second in the whole city underneath the sheriff, okay? And he couldn't wait to get out of there. And we were talking about this stuff 10 years ago. See, and he said, Roger, we talk about this stuff all the time, and none of us can retire quick enough. And they were doing the exact same thing 10 years ago.
because he said they get people that are really competent with high IQs, and they hire the lowest people they get. So this has been an agenda for a while. Now, what I wanted to bring up, though, in relation to this, Al, is something that John taught us in those classes 20 years ago that I remember. I wish I could remember who said it, and he can't either, unfortunately. But it was a comment that he made that really stuck with me, okay? And it was like Cook or Blackstone or Maitland or one of those really famous jurists from England. And the statement is very simple, and it said, the first engine of tyranny is a corrupt judiciary.
Yeah.
So as long as you got the lower IQ cops that are doing anything they want, and you got a corrupt judiciary that's going to rubber stamp it, You got tyranny going, buddy.
What's the worst Supreme Court decision in the history of this country? What do you think is the worst Supreme Court decision? Do you have an opinion?
It's very interesting. When you say worst, let's qualify that. Do you mean the one with the most drastic repercussions?
Yes.
Okay. I would say, without thinking of it, just the one that would come to mind immediately with me is after Roosevelt restacked the Supreme Court. And in that, he made a guy named Hugo Black in the 40s the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he was one of the extras that they had added in. Hugo Black was a Grand Mason of the Ku Klux Klan in Tennessee, and he was the guy that took the sentence out of Jefferson's letter about church and state.
Yep.
Totally out of context, and put it in that decision, and that's what they've used to take God out of the schools. And if you want to talk about a corrupting influence, I don't know that you can get much more base than that.
Well, here's one. Here's what I think it is. All right, there are undoubtedly a number of candidates, and if we talk to 10 or 15 members of the audience and they offer their opinion, we might not have any consensus on what the worst
is. Let's have a contest. Let's have a contest around this. That's a pretty good idea. Be interesting.
Well, maybe we'll do that. But
right in.
Let me tell you what I think is the worst decision. Marbury versus Madison. It was all the way back, yes, one of the first decisions out of the Supreme Court. And what did they declare? They declared that whenever there was an issue as to what is or is not constitutional, that the Supreme Court would be the one to decide.
Oh boy, that set it up for some
of
those amounts up.
Who should be the authority on what is or is not constitutional, Roger? And the answer is, and who should that be?
Oh man,
it should be the author of the law. But what is constitutional? Who is the authority behind the Constitution? We the people.
Sure.
The ones who should decide what is or is not constitutional is the jury.
Absolutely.
They're the author of the law. We the people tell the idiots in Washington and the morons working for the police department, we will tell you what the Constitution says. I understand this opens the door for misinterpretations and debates and certain amount of conflicts, and it goes from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But it would also compel people to be involved in what does the Constitution mean. We'd take an interest in it. We'd be almost as interested in it as we are in Dancing with the Stars.
The people. Please.
Anytime a constitutional issue should come up, that should be decided. It is the people's law. It's not the government's law. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union and so on. We the people make that Constitution valid. We're the ones who should decide what it means. When the Supreme Court said, nope, we're going to decide, that's when the people began to be moved out of the equation. From my perspective, although the damage was not obvious or apparent at the time, it's where we are today. It's crux. For me, that's the worst decision that they have ever come up with. So,
you know, there's my teacher, John Benson, is as schooled in the law as anybody that I know in the entire world. Okay, I'd put him up against all those Supreme Court justices together. All right. And John has come to the conclusion that the jury is the absolute underpinning of a republic. Because now you get a jury of your peers up there, and what you're talking about right here, who's the final arbiter, is you get that issue up in court, and if it's the whole thing runs the way it was designed by the founding fathers, the idea is if I convict this guy of that, they can convict me of that, and I'm acquitting him.
Well, I understand. I understand it. But the idea that the people would remain involved, it is the people's law. The statutes are the government's law. The Constitution is the people's law. Completely different authorities. If the Congress or the Supreme Court wants to say what the statutes mean, fine. But the Constitution should remain in the hands of the people. And if it did, there'd certainly be mistakes. But regardless, the people would be more involved. They'd be more aware. The country would be more constitutional.
You know, that's what we touched on in the last segment. What they've done is taken private law, contract law, and they're using it for public purposes through those statutes and regulations.
And they've laid the foundation.
Constitution. And they take the public law, which is God's law, nature's God, and they use it for private purposes.
Well, I understand. We're going to take a break right now. Here's what we're going to take as a break for some more commercial announcements. We'll be back in just a moment, folks. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be dependent on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku-band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Roger S. Sales, calling in from Argentina. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I want to remind you, Melody has a special at for coins today. Brilliant uncirculated Swiss franc. This is pre-1933. It's almost a fifth of an ounce of gold. It's a great bartering tool. Highly accepted, highly recognized and accepted, along with 21-ounce silver eagles. From 2013, dated 2013, total package includes shipping, $765. You get a fifth of an ounce of gold, just a shade under. All of these coins are just, they say 1 ounce, and it's a touch under 1 ounce. We've got the Swiss franc is just a shade under a fifth of an ounce. And a fifth of an ounce of gold, 20 silver eagles, $765. If you want to take it one step further, if they purchase 10 packages, they'll receive free one-tenth gold eagle, $150 value, tenth of an ounce gold eagle. So if you get 10 of these packages, you get one circulated Swiss franc, fifth of an ounce for each, with each of the packages. Well, she hasn't made this clear. You better call Melody. You better call. I'm reading this. I won't go into what you get with 10 of them. You'll get a deal on 10, but it's not clear from what I was received what that is.
Well, I'll say something in Melody's defense. If she's got 10-ounce pieces of gold, she's doing real good, because those things are real hard to get these days.
I understand that all the fractional pieces are, and in fact, there is a growing delay on silver right now also.
Yes.
Although she warned me, she said, we'll let people know that, you know, it might be that with silver, you may have to wait 3 to 5 weeks for silver. But she says there's no excuse for 8 weeks, and that's what you'll find with some of the dealers and some of the competitors. In any case, I am a public school graduate and I can't do my math properly, give Melody a call, 1-800-375-4188. She's got a deal. You understand? Discount gold and silver. We've got a couple of callers who've been waiting, we'll see if they're still waiting, Roger. But let's see which we can. Let's take caller number one, Sam from Texas. Sam, are you there?
Yes, sir. I could make a comment about public high school and low IQ with you two guys on the line, but I'm going to resist temptation there. And
we can make the same kind of comments about our audience, so go ahead, though.
Turnabout airplay.
Roger, last week you said you were going to make a comment about Mr. Snowden passing up his, having his citizenship revoked, and I wanted to hear that, but unfortunately you guys blown most of the show. But before I'm going to listen off air, but I want to ask you a couple of questions before. If a person who has a passport already, and is there a way to amend it or...
Well, here's the way they do it, Sam. Hold on. They got two passport applications. They got an original one that's if you get the colored one from the post office, the one I've got is orange, and the renewal was purple. And I had one of my students that went through this recently, so I can tell you from pretty straight information. You could use either, because there's a theory for either. You're applying for the first time in a new political status, you could use the first one. But if you've already got a passport, the same warning language, warning, you can attach documentation, including affidavits, is also in the renewal form, which tells me that you can use the renewal. Now, this person did that. She already had a passport. She went ahead and sent it in and got it expedited, by the way, and I'm going to give you a tip on that in a second. And she sent it in. She got it back in 10 days, and about 2 weeks later, they sent her old passport back, too, which was still good, by the way. All right. So if you're going to do that and you want to get it expedited, this is what I was told 6 years ago. There on the front of the application, it says, or somewhere in the application, it says, do you have a trip planned? And if you're going to pay the extra for expedited processing, you put a trip in there. Because if you don't, you can pay the 100 and whatever it is extra to expedite it, and they'll stick it on the bottom of the expedition pile. If you've got a date for a trip, they put it on the top of the expedition file. So, you know, I think you'd do it with the renewal, Sam, is how I'd do it if it was me now. I had never had one before, so obviously I used the first time.
Okay, Roger. The form that you have in the book, is there somewhere online that somebody can get that and maybe tweak it to their benefit? The form in the book.
Well, I'm going to say stay tuned, I think, but not right now. It's in the book. Because my stance on this, Sam, is this is not a paper filing exercise. If you're going to make the decision to move out from man's laws and his jurisdiction over under God's laws, you're the one that's got to defend it. So my position has always been, as a former teacher, that somebody writing their affidavit or their declaration, that's kind of your final exam. Okay, and I want you to have the information that you write it for this reason, is if you make that decision, you're the one that's got to defend it.
Okay. Well, we're talking about, I think you said 18 years for you and
30 for Al, but see, we've taken all of those years and condensed them for you guys. You can do it a heck of a lot faster than we did it. We had to feel our way through this thing. We're telling you what we found and how we did it. You can pick that up much easier than being a pathfinder, buddy. I promise you. You know the old saying about the pioneers? You know who the pioneers are? Because they're the ones with all the arrows in their back. And I bet you Al relates to that the same way I do.
Yeah, I do. Okay. I get it. There's arrows out there, that's for sure. All right, Sam, thanks for your call.
Thanks, Sam. Sam, were you the one that called in about a month ago saying my stuff was so hard to understand and this, that, and the other?
That's me.
Okay, man. Well, listen, you hang on.
I'm still waiting for you to pull out with some kind of revision on that to kind of help us.
I've been real distracted, okay, and I'm sorry. But that's the way life is, and I'm going to get to that, and it's very important, and I know the importance of it. But what I would tell you to do is just go back and go over and over and over that material, and don't think complicated. Start training yourself to think in concepts, and if you will think in concepts, you'll literally put your mind above the information, and when you're looking down on it, it becomes much easier to understand if it's not cluttered with all these specificities and confusion that's put in there to distract, obfuscate, and confuse you. We're talking by design here. This is by design.
Hi. Sam, thank you for your call. We've got one more caller. We got to get in here before the end of the program. So, and
you hadn't forgot about Mr. Snowden either.
All right, let's move on and see if Dave is still on the line. Dave from Michigan, are you still there, Dave?
I am still here.
Thanks for waiting.
And I have a question. I have a question for Roger. It seems like he's having too much fun in Argentina now that he's got the group of the U.S. government office back. But my question is also concerning the passport situation. Should the passport, it says for U.S. citizens with a small c or U.S. nationals. So
right
should
on
I
there.
Have expected – hello?
Yeah, it's right on there. I mean, it's very prevalent in the document if you understand what you're reading.
Yep. However, should I have expected my passport to come back indicating that I was either a U.S. citizen or a U.S. national?
They use the same term in there. On the front page, if I could go get mine real quick, I'd read it to you. It says on the front page, this bearer is either a citizen of the United States / or U.S. national. It never differentiates, and you got to think of this as your enemy does, okay? They're not going to send you, let's say all the slave passports are blue, which all the passports are blue, and the U.S. national over here is green. Well, they're not going to send you a green passport where the slave can go around to all the other people and go, look what I got, mine's different. They're not going to do that. They want everything conforming because let me give you an important point to everybody listening. We talk about illusions that they've created. But lately, my friend down here that's working with me real closely, my Argentinian buddy, has given me a new word, and this has been able to fine-tune my thinking. And that is these people accomplish what they accomplish through simulation. They simulate. And you've got to be able to pierce the simulation and find the reality. And that's hopefully what our information allows people to do, because this information is nothing but a tool.
Understood. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Before we go, I want to read you something. Yeah, I'm still here. We got a couple of minutes. Let me read you. I'm trying to find it here real quick. This is Al and I both agree on one thing. When he was doing the anti-shyster and in my little 2 years of this little deal, the biggest pieces of information have come from our listeners. It's people that send us stuff that fill in the big blanks. And somebody sent me this right after I got started. I don't know who it was, but God bless them, okay? And this is an old, where'd it go? This is an old site from back in the 1800s. If you're familiar with Supreme Court law, you know, in the books, back in the early days, they used to name books after people. It wasn't, you know, Supreme Court 3 reporter. It was Wheat, Peters, etc. And this particular site, if I can get my little computer to work fast enough and bring it up, is from the old book called Peters. And the site, whoever cited this didn't do it correctly because they left the year off. But this is the site. It's 9 Peters 692. That's the book 9 Peters and page 692. And this is what it says. How much time we got? We got time, Al. It says, if a passport, a passport in brackets, is a document which, from its nature and object, is addressed to foreign powers, purporting to only be a request that the bearer of it may pass safely and freely. And it is to be considered rather in the character of a political document by which the bearer is recognized in foreign countries as an American citizen, and which, by usage and the law of nations, hyper important, is received as evidence of that fact. But this is a very different light from that in which it is to be viewed in a court of justice, where the inquiry is as to the fact of citizenship. It is a mere ex parte certificate, the passport, and if founded upon any evidence produced to the Secretary of State establishing the fact of citizenship, your declaration or affidavit, that evidence, if of a character admissible in a court of law, which an affidavit is, ought to be produced upon the trial as higher and better evidence of the fact. So when you send this declaration to state and you wanted to challenge them, this document could be called into evidence because it's in their files. It bypasses the law of evidence.
Well, not only that, you can probably keep a verified copy of whatever you sent. In my opinion, if I had a passport of the sort, with the strategy you're talking about right now, I would probably have a verified copy of my affidavit that I'd sent to the Secretary of State. I'd have that verified copy attached to the passport, or at least close at hand. I'd say, this has been submitted with the application. I'd create evidence, and I'd have it with – that would be my approach on it.
I'm going to tell you, anytime I deal with any of the government people, I got a copy on me, okay?
Yeah.
Now, this is very interesting because about a year or so ago, as all of the bank stuff and these treaties was kicking in, there was a great article in Bloomberg, I think, and a Wall Street Journal, one of those two, and it was an interview with somebody at Credit Suisse over there in Switzerland. And they're going, well, I'm sorry, we can't open bank accounts for citizens or residents anymore. And they go down the article a couple of paragraphs, and he has one little sentence in there. It says, however, we do have provisions for U.S. nationals.
Really?
Yeah, I have it right there in Wall Street Journal, man.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, well, let me take a look back here. Dave, I want to thank you for your call.
Yeah.
And
I appreciate it.
Let me tell you, I want to tell you something before you leave, man. I'm having the time of my life down here. Okay? This place is fabulous.
Well, you'll have to invite us all down one of these days, Roger, as soon as you get a mansion built down. You get enough rooms for all of us, and we'll be down. We'll charter a boat, and we'll be coming in to, I don't know.
We'll party. We'll party, man.
Absolutely. Party down. We're down to our last 30 seconds. Dave, want to thank you again for your call. Roger, you want to make a fast pitch, and then we have to say bye-bye.
Shameless self-promotion. You want to check out any more of this info, I'll give you two websites. I'll spell them, say them and spell them. www.surfs-up.net, that's SERFS-UP.NET, and my teacher's book, which exposes the origins of the tax system used by the king to collect his taxes for over 300 years, brought to America, the names and remedy hidden, and that is at www.no1040tax.com. That's probably the first time this information has been in print in over 250 years.
Okay, Roger, thank you. I want to thank all you folks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. I'll be back with Melody on financial survival. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.